You are listening to Spoiler Alert, all things film in Providence and beyond on 88.1 FM, WELH Providence, and streaming and archived on bsrlive.com. I'm your host, Tony Pinocchia, and today we feature interviews with filmmakers from the films Elevate, The Ripoff, and Jukebox Vanishing America. For more information on the filmmakers, visit rifilmfest.org or click the links under the show information for this episode of Spoiler Alert on bsrlive.com. Our first film today is an Australian short called Elevate.
Hi there, my name's Ben and I'm the director of Elevate, a short film from Australia. And we're travelling with it, and Providence here, which we love, is our first stop in the US, so we're really enjoying it so far.
And this has been our North American premiere. Then we head off to LA for the Los Angeles International Film Festival and also up to Palm Springs.
Oh, so you're really going to see the US.
Absolutely,
we're on the festival junket.
Yep, we're on the circuit.
So tell us about this film, because people listening may never have seen this film.
Okay, Elevate is a dark psychological thriller. For me personally, it's a story about connection and reaching out and wanting to connect with people. With modern technology these days, mobile phones, email, Blackberries, so on, and there's seems that we're getting less and less versed with just talking to people. And that's what, essentially, for me personally, my film is about, that focuses around a loner that not a lot of people talk to, and no matter what talks to him, in our case a talking elevator, he responds to it. So for me personally, that's what the film is about.
Did you want to add to that?
Well, I think Ben really summed it up. It really is a story about human connection, even though he's connecting with a not-so-human element, being an elevator in this case. And it really looks at how he expresses himself and looks for an outside source for other problems that are going on in his life, basically. And it's not your typical film. It's quite different from a lot of the things that we've seen so far here at Rhode Island. But it really does tell a human story in a not-so-human world.
So where did the idea come from to actually pick him being in an elevator and having the elevator basically be the love of his life?
I did spend a bit of time thinking about that, and I thought about what things are you around a lot that you kind of just stand in. You know, I mean, when you're in your car, you're kind of driving your car. When you're at home, you're kind of moving around and all the rest of it. But at work, particularly in the elevator, you're just sitting there. You're just standing there, and you're just waiting. And I thought, oh, that's quite an interesting concept. And yeah, I don't know what came to me about an elevator. I just, a little bit of that, and just, why not? There was a bit of why not in this film.
Where did you get some of the different acting talent, like particularly the elevator voice and the main actor?
Yep. The elevator voice, a little bit of trivia here for you, is actually our writer and producer, Shelley Egan. She filled in on the days of recording because our actor needed a voice to respond to. And we all thought that she did a great job. She actually studied film acting in New York, so she knew what she was doing. And we went back in the recording studio and recorded her voice. So that's where the voice of the elevator comes from. Our main star, Mandy Kane, is an established musician back in Australia. He's had a couple of albums out and gets some airplay on the radio. He's making a bit of a break into the US here. He's just recently finished up an LA and Canadian tour. I've known Mandy for a couple of years, and as soon as I started writing this film, I actually couldn't see anybody else but Mandy in it. We did do an open casting call, and it only confirmed my view that Mandy was the right part. Angela was a friend of a friend. She's studying at the National Institute of Dramatic Arts in Australia, which is where Geoffrey Rush, Mel Gibson, a lot of popular Australian actors studied, so I knew she had the talent to do it. And then our third actor, Sally Ann Ryan, was a friend of a friend. She's done many feature films back home.
So you mentioned the musician being in the lead actor in the film, and I noticed that quite a bit of the music. You want to tell us a little bit more about the soundtrack for the film?
Yeah, the soundtrack was very important to everybody involved with it. It was, you know, it's something that we really talked about right from the very start. And before the film was actually even finished, the main song, which is called Glitch, and you can get it on Mandy Kane's latest album, that was actually finished before the film was. And I actually used that as a bit of inspiration. It was quite interesting the way it worked. I told Mandy I wanted him to be in the film. I wrote the script along with Shelley and Sally, and I showed him the script, and he wrote the song based on the script, and then I based some of the visuals on his song. So it was kind of a good collaborative effort there. So, but yeah, you know, he did all the music throughout the whole piece, and it brings the whole film together.
And the other actress you said, was that the person that played the mom, or was that the person that played the boss?
Angela Scundi plays the manager, and Sally Ann Ryan plays the mother.
Okay. What did you do before this film? Like, what came before this film, and then what led you into this film?
Yeah, sure. Lisa and I and Shelley, our other creative partner on this project, we actually all work in television back home. We work for various different production companies. I currently work for Channel 9, which is exactly the same as your CBS here. And just basically, we all wanted to, you know, make the leap from television, which is a great learning environment, but artistically it can be a little bit limited. So we wanted to do something that kind of pushed our artistic abilities and put our vision out to the world as well.
So do you have a pretty gloomy vision of offices? It seems it based on the vision in the film.
I absolutely do, actually. I spent about a year working in a bank in Australia on about the 25th level, it was around about, a bank called NAB back home, and I just hated it. I just thought, look at all these
people. There's got to be more to life.
There's got to be more life. And I was actually in the elevator one day. I mean, I was only like 17. I just got out of high school and was between high school and college. And a guy was standing in the elevator looking at me, and he just goes, mate, there has got to be more to life than this. And that kind of stuck with me, and I think a bit of that resonates in this film.
Tell us again where people can get more information on the film and different projects you guys are doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, currently we're working on our feature film, which is scheduled for production in January, February next year. And that's going to be quite different from a group of Australians. We're doing some things that haven't been seen before and breaking some new ground, I believe. And if people would like to find out more about Elevate, they can go to our website, which is elevatemovie.com. And we're also on MySpace, myspace.com/elevatethemovie.
So where is the film at this point? You mentioned that this is the first stop in the U.S. Where are you? Where's the future of this film?
The future as pretty much as an example of our skills. I think even though Lisa's right, our next project is going to be very different, but I think this one gives people who are interested in this a bit of a window into, oh, okay, I can see where these guys are going. So, yeah, you know, just something to put out there into the world before we make the leap into the world of features.
Okay, well, thanks so much, guys.
Thanks for listening.
And, thank you very much. Providence has been wonderful to us.
Thanks, guys.
All right, well, check out Elevate if this draws you. And again, the website's
elevatemovie.com.
And then the MySpace page?
myspace.com/elevatethemovie.
Okay. Thank you very much, guys.
You are listening to Spoiler Alert, All Things Film in Providence and Beyond on 88.1 FM WELH Providence and BSRLive.com. Our next interview today is with the makers of a short entitled The Rip-Off.
My name is Elizabeth Welling, and I'm with the short film The Rip-Off.
My name is Kun Chang, and I'm the director of the film The Rip-Off.
Tell us what the inspiration of doing a film called Rip-Off was.
Actually, an article about pickpocketing in New York Times.
I mean, it was an interesting film, that's for sure. I mean, we learned a lot about pickpocketing. There was actually a guy coaching on the set. That was amazing. His name is Apollo.
Apollo Robbins.
Yeah, yeah, and he was doing like all the stunts. It all looks easy, but all the actors had to sort of rehearse, and it was very choreographed, and Quinn did a lot of choreography with the camera to make it all... Well, I can't give the punch line, right?
But and I mean, spoiler alert, sure you can.
You gotta be curious, listeners, and you gotta come and see the film.
There you go.
Yeah, you definitely need to see the film, and I mean, it's amazing because you really, I mean, you have a shock after, and I mean, it's real things. It's actually things that are happening, you know, and how sometimes you participate to your own ripoff in a way.
So where was this actually shot?
It was shot in Montreal. We shot over 4 nights in a real hi-fi store, and every night we had to bring everything in, put everything up, and in the morning we had to take it all out again, and then next night we had to make it all look the same.
Wow, that must have been quite a feat there doing that.
Yeah, it was a very tight thing, and they had to start. We had to be out at 7 o'clock. We could only start at 6 o'clock in the evening, and it was a very tight schedule. Shot in the winter, and there was no way we could go over time. So,
was it actually a similar type of store that, like, as far as like the merchandise?
Yeah. Well, I would say it's kind of a gray market store, definitely, and that's very much the inspiration for the film as well.
Well, since we have one of the main actresses here, you want to tell us about your character in the film?
I'd say that she's somebody who really wants to defend a cause, and sometimes, you know, you don't get the full picture of a situation and you sort of defend something that you don't really know. Visually, I'm sure Kun did a wonderful job. He's been doing a lot of animation, and visually it's quite amazing what he did with the film.
Which leads me to, like, what your foundation is. What before you started this film, what did you do beforehand, or what are you doing?
What am I doing? I work as a director. I've done documentaries before. This is my first fictional film. I've done animation for video games. I did something for a game called The Prince of Persia. Otherwise, I worked as a production designer and concept artist on a couple of films. Star Wars, The Fifth Element, The Fabulous Thunderbirds, stuff like that.
So how would you compare this experience with this film to some of the other work that you've done and are currently doing?
I have to say, directing fiction actually turned out to be one of the most exciting things I've ever done. I really, really enjoyed it. I mean, there are lots of things that I would do differently. It's the first experience. I think the fact that we shot 4 nights made it a tough shoot in terms of, like, keeping everyone on their toes. But I think I really enjoyed the fact that you can actually plan things ahead, which you can to a certain degree in a documentary, but definitely not to the same degree. So,
as far as acting, what else have you done in addition to this, and how would you compare the experience with other work you've done and with this?
Very different. I think Kun is a wonderful director because he's very clear about what he's doing with the camera, and that leaves us a lot of space. I've been working on big sets like on Varian's War with William Hurt, so there's not too much space for us to do things, and Kun was really letting us put our own inspiration into it, and at the same time telling us exactly what he was doing, and it was a lot of fun, and the stealing and everything, that was really something totally new, totally unexpected.
Everything that's stolen in the film is actually stolen by the actors themselves. They were coached by a professional pickpocket, but when we shot it was all shot, and all the steals actually happened for real. So you see the steals several times, but, like, when you see the film the first time, if you actually look, things are actually being stolen.
As far as editing, what was the editing process like? It seems like, you know, with that, you know, with the first and the second half of the film, what was that like? What did you use for editing?
The film was written like that. It was basically a film which was told once, and then you see the same story a second time, but you see from a different angle. So, and it was shot like that as well. So the editing pretty much followed the script. One of the things that happened during the editing was that we had started shooting the film more or less like a comedy, and we realized at some point that the tone of the film was not a comedy, or not necessarily a comedy. So we had to make a choice at some point, because, like, the film, it was kind of like going in two different directions at some point. So that was one of the things. The other thing is that we took some time to edit it, because the editor was working on a feature film at the same time. So it's good to kind of, like, come back every couple of weeks and look at it and go, like, oh, okay, you could do this and you could do that.
So one question would be, on one side, from the acting perspective, how are these people like to act with, and how did you get these people, and who are they, besides the lovely talent we have right here?
I think something that was unusual on this film, because it was so technical, and there's a lot of choreography involved, and, like, people having to be at the same place at the same time, because you shoot the scene from several angles, and there's certain things that have to happen, like steals and things like that. It meant that we had to do rehearsals, which was great. I mean, we did three rehearsals. The actors went through, I had already gone through a lot of the steals with the pickpocket before, and he came up for the shoot, and we changed everything around, obviously. But one of the things that was great was that we rehearsed in the actual set, and so when we got on set, because the time was very tight and it was very ambitious what he wanted to do, at least the actors knew pretty much what to do, so it was a very pleasant experience in that way.
Did you want to add to that from your perspective?
Yeah, it was a very pleasant experience, but the fact that it was a night shoot was very different for me anyway, and it opened a brand new perspective, and working with the other actors, they were all very different. It was a great casting because really everybody was completely different, so it's kind of fun of seeing everybody in that film. And being tired, yeah, it sort of opened everybody for some reason. You're so tired, you don't have time to act really. You're being very real, so much that I had to slap somebody, but she was supposed to get away as an actress and she didn't. And it was one of those things that everybody's like, oh my god, this is not acting anymore. But and Kun was really good at keeping everybody motivated, you know, like at the 5 a.m. after having like a big Lebanese shishtauk, you know. I mean, we were still laughing. It was a great experience, and I think it shows. People were laughing today, and I didn't expect that, you know. It was a very nice screening. People received it well, and it was the first time I was seeing it.
Wow.
I was very surprised too.
So you were laughing?
I was certainly laughing, yeah.
It's actually funny that, because I've had 2 other screenings and people laugh at completely different places. Like, this is the first time I've seen with an American audience, and a lot of people laughed at the end where people usually don't laugh. And there are a lot of places where people used to laugh where people didn't react to. That's what's interesting about that every screening is different and people react differently. And it's kind of like if people start off laughing, they go into a different way, I think, at least. I can't see the film objectively anymore, but it's kind of like, it seems like every time people see the film, like, it's a different experience depending on the audience that's around. So that's interesting.
Yeah, that's what's great with having these getting to have these live screenings. So I wish the best for it. Well, how can people get more information about you guys and about the film?
We don't have a website yet, but I think the easiest thing is probably to look it up on the internet. It's called The Ripoff, and my name is Kun Chang. So put those 4 or 5 words into Google, and you'll find it. Oh, Apollo Robbins as well, the pickpocket. He's pretty big on the internet.
Yeah, did you want to give a little quick history of him?
Yeah, Apollo Robbins, you can find his website at isteel.com. Apollo Robbins is probably, well, he's considered one of the world's best pickpockets, and those are people like David Copperfield and Penn and Teller that say this. He lives in Vegas. He's starting a show, big show with pickpocketing and everything else, and he's a magician as well. And I met him like in a very strange way. I realized that I couldn't do this film without having a real pickpocket involved. I got in touch with someone who did that in Montreal, and this guy told me at some point that he was working with Cirque du Soleil on a show, and I was sitting in a cafe and 2 guys came in and they were like making all these sounds and things like that, and like they did this thing where they turned their head and kind of like went crack as if their head, as if they'd just broken their neck. So I started laughing, and then we started talking, and I said, so what do you guys do here? And they said, well, we're working for the Cirque du Soleil. And I said, oh, are you working on the show with the pickpocket? And one of the guys, well, both the guys just looked at me, and then one of them said, that's the pickpocket. And he pointed at Apollo, and I said, oh, that's cool, I'm doing a short film about pickpocket. And he said, no way, you know. And like, and then we started talking about it, and he said, oh, it's too bad, I'm going back to Las Vegas tomorrow, and I can't do this, and I'd be really like to do the choreography for that. I said, yeah, that'd be really cool, you know, I'm really looking for that. And then I ended up working in Los Angeles on a project, and I went to Las Vegas, and I met with Apollo, and we did all the choreography, and then eventually we invited him to Montreal for the shoot.
Great. See, people are clapping for it. Look at that. Well, do you guys want to say any closing words to our audience, to maybe aspiring filmmakers or current filmmakers?
Believe in Providence.
Great. Did you?
Become a baker.
There you go. Or become a pickpocket.
Or become a pickpocket, something.
All right, well, thanks, guys, again. You are listening to Spoiler Alert
All Things Film in Providence and Beyond on 88.1 FM, WELH Providence, and BSRLive.com. And finally today, we discuss the documentary short, Jukebox Vanishing America.
Okay, we are live here at the 10th Annual Rhode Island International Film Festival in Providence, Rhode Island. Why don't you introduce yourself to the audience?
My name is Lance Michio, and I'm the president and CEO of Happy Trailers HD, a Los Angeles-based production company. So we have a film called Jukebox Vanishing America. It's a short documentary and a tribute to the jukebox shot here in Providence in January of this year.
And can you tell us what your inspiration was to put this film together?
A person came to my production company, a graduate from Boston University, a film graduate, and he wanted to make a film about the jukebox, and he had taken it to a bunch of production companies, and I've done some work for the History Channel and shot some of their pieces. So he found me in an ad I had in Script Magazine, and He just told me what he wanted to do, and I immediately got it. I'm a musicologist as well, so I loved it, and I said, yeah, let's do it. He said, we have to shoot in Providence. We have to shoot at Nick and E's, which is a famous jukebox bar here in Providence, and we did the shoot in one day, and it's gotten fantastic reviews. It's at History Channel right now and Discovery Channel being reviewed they want to make a full hour show out of it. Our piece is only 8 minutes. But we shot with local musician Mark Cutler, lyricist Scott Duhamel, and Terry Moran, the president of McLaughlin Moran, Budweiser distributorship. And we had a fantastic experience in Providence. It's a unique, beautiful city. It's gritty. It has some wonderful architecture, below ground wiring, which doesn't interfere with your shoots. You can have a period look to it. So, you know, it's a wonderful town. This is a great film festival. This is considered to filmmakers one of the top festivals. I think it's ranked 12th. And so, you know, it's quite an honor to be here, especially I have a film shot here. So I feel very blessed and lucky that, you know, we got in and we got such great reviews for our film.
So can you give us some more details on the film?
Yeah, the film is basically just a tribute to the jukebox as a shared experience. The subtitle is From Edison to iPods. And basically, we talk about the jukebox as it's being lost as part of Vanishing America, one of the beautiful things in our culture that is disappearing because of, you know, technology. There's the digital jukebox, the iPod, the nanopod. People listen to their own, you know, 2,000 songs, but the jukebox is a shared experience and it must be accepted by the masses. So when you put that quarter, a dollar, or $5 bill in that jukebox, you're not just playing to yourself, you're playing to everybody. I mean, and you could turn the place into an exciting dancing, or you could clear the place out. So, you know, there's a risk involved in your choices, just like in life. So the jukebox has that carnival feel. The old Wurlitzes, the Rockolas, they're just beautiful machines that were high art to me. And they're vanishing. They're vanishing. There's less and less, and, you know, and more bars use DJs who are interactive and hip, you know, and you know, it's part of our vanishing culture, and something that every person I've talked to, I talked to people while doing a piece for the History Channel about hippies. I tagged on questions about the jukebox and asked people like Peter Coyote and Country Joe and Fito de la Parra from Canned Heat and Mountain Girl, Jerry Garcia's, she's married to Jerry Garcia, and they all have memories. Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan actually contacted me via seeing our piece somewhere online, sent me an email, told me how much it meant to him. So, I mean, that's a big deal. It was one little line, but, you know, it meant a lot. And it just showed me that how many people can really relate to the jukebox and how many people have an emotional tie to it, some fond memory of asking their parents for a quarter to put in a jukebox. That's special.
So what would you say, have you seen the biggest jukebox that's still in existence?
The biggest? I don't know. Some of the most beautiful ones I saw were actually at a local resident, Terry Moran's, who's a collector. And he had the old peacock, which is just a beautiful piece of work. It's hard to explain, but it's in our film. And if anybody wants to see our film, they can go to www.happytrailershd.com. And go to completed projects and documentaries, and you can watch those films online. And it's also the top-ranked film on IFC Media Lab for 6 months. It's ranked number one, with thousands of hits and views from all over the world. So, you know, there's a lot of people that remember the jukebox fondly, and our film, you know, just reminds them of how beautiful they were.
How have you felt as far as, like, sort of that jukebox vibe of, in addition to the internet, the live audience seeing these films? How has it fared? What kind of reaction are you getting from people?
I've had a fantastic reaction. Today, right at this event, a bunch of other filmmakers came to tell me how much they loved my film. And that is the greatest compliment. When you're recognized by your peers in a very competitive business where it's kind of cutthroat, when people come up to you and say, "I love your work. You did a beautiful piece. It made me feel really good." That's a lot. That means a lot. That means a lot to any artist. And, you know, I was moved by that. So it's I've had a great experience here, and the interaction's terrific. I want to talk a little bit about what our company does. It's a unique company. We help new filmmakers. Getting into the business and film business for screenwriters especially, there's only one way in. If you don't have an agent, and that's to win script writing contests, which are very difficult, time consuming, and a lot of waiting, and then don't pan out for the most part. Not all of them, but for the most part. What I've done is I've started a company with industry professionals, people that work for Steven Spielberg, guys like Mike Bloomberg, who does Foley for him, Robert DeVico, who's a production designer, did Boondock Saints and 3,000 Miles to Graceland. All these people will work for me. We shoot pieces. We actually take a screenplay from a new writer and we conceptualize it into a 2 to 3 minute trailer, and then we shoot that trailer in 1 or 2 days, therefore reducing the cost and establishing a trailer to give to production companies so they see it almost as a finished product. Psychologically, they get it right then, and then when they find out it's just a trailer based on a screenplay, they want to see the script. And that's our goal, is to get the scripts read of our clients and get them in front of the people. And we've had tremendous success. We just finished a piece called Tumbling Dice. We shot in Vegas in 1 day for you know, small amount of money, but the production value is fantastic. And we've actually helped a few writers get options. So we feel that we're doing a good, necessary work. But we also take those writers and empower them by bringing them on the set with us and putting them in a position that they want to be in, either as an executive producer or a director or a producer. We have someone with them and we guide them through it, but they actually learn the ropes. So they get more than just a promo piece from their screenplay. They get an education. And to every screenwriter that works in this industry, knowing how the things work on the set and the process from beginning, pre-production, production, post-production, and publicity and advertising and selling the product and film festivals is all a great education for them. And, you know, it feels good to do that. You know, we're a unique company. We're the only company that does it. Variety did a big article about us. I did it myself. I made a trailer based on a screenplay, The Garrison. It's Dante's Inferno. It's Stalingrad as a backdrop. When I told that to producers, they looked at me and went, "Oh." But I shot it in 1 day using a whole bunch of reenactors, and I was able to option it to John Daly, 13-time Academy Award winner, Platoon, Terminator, Hoosiers, Last Emperor, all those films. He optioned my screenplay, and now it's being made into a film.
Yeah, that's amazing. Can you tell us what the future brings and maybe a final word for our audience?
The future brings hopefully a lot of new talent to us that we'll be able to help and make them, you know, introduce them to the industry. And the final word is I just want to thank the people of Providence. You live in a beautiful city, a unique city, and to have such a great film festival is a wonderful thing for not only your economy, but for the cultural and art aspect of the city. And I can't tell you how grateful I am and how wonderful it's been to shoot here and to premiere, world premiere, our piece, Jukebox Vanishing America.
And how do people get more information on you and Jukebox Vanishing America?
I want to mention one other thing. Matt Turner, who is the guy who is from Providence and brought us here, and hired me to make his piece. And we became partners after that. So You can get a hold of me by www.happytrailershd.com. Look on our website. We have our mission statement, and we're located in Venice, California.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us here. Again, we're live at the 10th annual Rhode Island International Film Festival here in Providence. You have been listening to Spoiler Alert, all things film in Providence and beyond on 88.1 FM WELH Providence and streaming and archived on bsrlive.com with your host, Tony Panacchia. For more information on the filmmakers on today's program, visit rifilmfest.org or click the links under the show information for this episode of Spoiler Alert on bsrlive.com.